I'm in this online writing group, and recently someone sent around an article on how we define success in publishing, which we had just been discussing. The article was written by one Cameron Hurley, whom I had not heard of because she writes science fiction, and I don't read too much science fiction these days. But the blog post was interesting and well-written, so I went to Ms. Hurley's blog to see what else she had to say. And there at the top, I found an article called Dear SFWA, which I assume is something like Science Fiction Writers Association.
Science Fiction Fantasy Writers of America,
And let's talk about censorship and bullying was the rest of that title. And it seemed to be addressing some pretty serious misogynist and racist backlash in the science fiction publishing industry. I was really impressed and interested to see such frank talk about such unfashionable issues on a popular science fiction writer's blog, and even more so when I saw that it was posted in a subject area called the F word. And I looked in that area and found more articles that were interesting and surprising, so I decided I needed to get this woman on the air, and she joins me now by phone. Cameron Hurley is an award-winning, Nebula-nominated writer, currently hacking out a living in marketing and advertising. She's lived in Fairbanks, Alaska, Durban, South Africa, and Chicago, but she grew up in and around Washington State. She has degrees in history from the University of Alaska and the University of KwaZulu-Natal. Her novels, God's War, Infidel, and Rapture, are part of a series known as the Beldam Apocrypha. A writer at the science fiction site Tor.com has described the series as, quote, brutal, character-driven, and morally complex, oh, and somewhat on the feminist side. Cameron Hurley, thanks for joining us.
Hello, thanks for the invite.
So first of all, from studying history, what led you to writing science fiction?
You know, science fiction is one of those genres where you can basically do anything that you want to do. We look at a lot of literary fiction, you know, that's very here and now, that says, oh, here's the state of the world, and here's how things are. And, you know, sometimes it's messed up, and sometimes it's beautiful, and sometimes it's wonderful. Just like, that's all great. But science fiction actually allows us to take ourselves out of all the cultural BS that we have going on and put ourselves into another cultural BS situation with all new stuff going on and saying, okay, when I strip away all of the stuff around us, all of our culture, all of our historical baggage, and I build something else, what parts of us are still human? So what parts of us that will be recognized? So that was really what drew me to science fiction. It wasn't so much, I mean, I love, you know, technological, cool, you know, forward thinking, oh my gosh, what could we do with all this great technology? That's great. But what really drew me to it was looking at how I could take and build different societies with different social mores than the ones that currently exist.
And you have described your first novel, God's War, as a tale of bugs, blood, and brutal women. Brutal women seems to be kind of a theme of your writing. You actually have a short story collection by that name. What's the appeal? Well, first of all, what do you mean by brutal women, and what is the appeal of brutal women for you?
I started a blog actually back in 2004, and I actually called it Brutal Women. One of the things that I sort of struggled with in my early 20s was coming to this idea of a different sort of way to be female, right? Like, I mean, you grow up and it's like, hey, here's the acceptable way to be female. You know, you need to be hot, you need to be skinny, and you need to be blonde, you need to be all these things. And then you start to realize, like, wow, I not only do I not conform to all these things, that will never happen. And I'm really miserable trying to do that. So what are some alternative ways of you know, still being, you know, female and powerful and strong and sort of like taking up space in the world in a way that I really was not so much encouraged to do as far as the popular media. I mean, my family was great. They're like, hey, you can do whatever you want to do. It's wonderful. And then you get kicked out into the real world and you're like, whoa, what the F is this? I can't believe it. All the stuff I told that, you know, that was totally over is in fact still out there. People still have a lot of crazy attitudes about what you can and can't do based on, you know, your configuration of parts. So when I looked at creating a blog, I actually started taking boxing classes in Chicago when I lived in Chicago. And it was really cool because for the first time in my life, like, I punched over a 200-pound kickboxing bag. And I was like, wow, like, my body's good for something. I'm really powerful. And there was something about the physicality of that and being able to say, wow, it's okay for me to take up space in the world. It's okay to be strong. And in fact, I felt had a lot more confidence when I sort of embraced that. And I was like, wow. So that was some of the appeal. A lot of the appeal also was, we see a lot of urban fantasy in today. And I think some of that was kicked off, of course, by the Buffy series, where you get the little blonde girl who runs around, and it's been the whole joke is, oh, she's really, really small and seems kind of sexy, but she kicks people's asses. I was like, well, that's great, but, you know, some of the reason that I feel, especially in urban fantasy book covers, not so much urban fantasy itself, once you actually dig into the covers themselves, the heroines can be really diverse. But you get a lot of these covers that sort of position women as, well, it's okay if you're strong as long as you're sexy. It's okay if you're strong as long as you're still vulnerable. It's okay if you're strong as long as you don't intimidate anyone else around you and you conform to the expectations that we have for femininity and for the way that you express your femininity. And so for me, I said, okay, well, you know, I want to talk about, okay, you meet a woman in an alley and I said, like, ooh, hey, she's kind of sexy. She could kick that butt. But it's like, oh my God, this person's going to really, like, this is a dangerous person. This is a really dangerous person that I really need to be careful of what I'm doing. So I said, okay, well, let's start to look at that. And I think that you see, especially in my short story collection, kind of going through different ways of, you know, all these horrible things. It's really interesting. I think there was a reader who actually came to me and did a review and said, you know, it's really interesting, you know, we put men in war situations and they do these horrible things and there's these terrible atrocities. And you see what Cameron Hurley does in a lot of her stuff is she will put women in these same similar situations, the same situations, and have them interacting in these ways. And you realize how messed up it is. These ways that we believe masculinity should be expressed. And you put women in that those situations, you're like, wow, this is really horrifying what we're doing to people and to ourselves. So I found that really fascinating to say, okay, you know, what, you know, you look into the abyss and the abyss looks back, like you become, you know, that thing. It's like you go, oh, okay, well, that's great. You know, women, you want to be scary. Okay, now what does that turn us into? And what is that turning? And then by association, what are we doing to do too? So it's really interesting as I started to get deeper and deeper into this. I did a lot of studying as far as with rebellions, rebel movements, traditional war and military tactics and strategy and a lot of stuff about psychology of killing and all that. And that all really comes into a lot of the fiction and the worlds that I explore and the situations that I put my characters in. So that was kind of like, I tend to come back to that when I'm like, okay, well, if we wanted to create a society like this, you know, yeah, there's some great things that would be there. And it'd be like, wow, you can take up space and be powerful, physically powerful. And there's also some real messed up stuff, the same messed up stuff that we see now.
You're listening to Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org. I'm Kate Raphael, and I'm speaking to blogger and science fiction author Cameron Hurley. As I alluded to in my introduction, you have written some things about how the science fiction fantasy world, publishing world, is not necessarily more evolved on the subjects of feminism and women's roles. Yeah. Than the rest of society, even though fantasy and science fiction, I mean, one of the things that attracts a lot of us to it is that it is an opportunity to imagine things that are different. I'm curious what the response has been from especially male science fiction writers and the publishing industry to your women, and if they appreciate the sort of turn that you've taken to putting women in situations and attributing women characteristics that are not typical for women in fiction, or if you've gotten pushback around, we don't want to see a woman behaving in these ways that we accept men behaving.
Well, to be honest, I think my work is part of a very long tradition of feminist science fiction. I think people look at, you know, the broader, you know, male science fiction, like, oh, it's all John Ringo, who's, anyway, I don't want to name drop too much, but anyway, so all these people who are basically really misogynistic and they write these, you know, terrible, like, wish fulfillment fantasies. It's like, I'm going to have sex with all these women and kill these terrorists. And it's like, okay, wow, that was really regressive and I have no interest in that. But then you get some really amazing writers, not just people like, you know, Ursula Le Guin has been around forever, but you get, you know, folks like Vonda McIntyre, Nalo Hopkinson, Octavia Butler, of course, James Tiptree Jr., who's originally born Alice Sheldon, and of course, Joanna Russ, who I really consider myself as very much of the Joanna Russ school of feminist science fiction, which is just like kind of that angry, out there, straight to the point, sort of fiction. My concerns when I first put out the book actually turned out to not be so much of an issue. I was really fascinated at how well received the books were, not just by, again, that kind of, you know, narrow feminist science fiction, you know, group of folks. I was like, okay, cool, this will really hit the button where there's some certain people. They're just really in a love sneak it. And they thought it was amazing. I picked it up and it was great. You know, sent some free books to WISCON, which is the feminist science fiction convention in Madison, Wisconsin. Great bunch of folks there. But also, it started to get a lot of mainstream interest. About half of my readers, it's 50-50. I actually did a thing on Goodreads where I went through all my folks, and it's 50% men, 50% women, as far as my Facebook fan page and my Goodreads reviews. I've had a lot of really, you know, wonderful reviews from both men and women. Some of your favorite fan letters are from the people who get it, right? There's a male protagonist in this sort of female-dominated society who is very subtly sort of put in his place throughout the book. And he said, you know, people talk about to me all the time about sexism and misogyny and all this stuff. And he's like, I didn't get it. It's like, I didn't get it until I put myself into Reese's shoes and I saw like this subtle way that like he had to endure, you know, the constant harassment and the subtle threats and these things. It's not like, oh, somebody, you know, pounds you on the head every day. It's this constant subtle, you know, insidious thing that sort of creeps up on you. And he's like, that was really cool. And I think what actually really did it was something I did similarly in a blog post I actually wrote for Aidan Moher's A Dribble of Ink blog, and it was called Women Have Always Fought, and it was unpacking the women, cattle, and slaves narrative, I believe, which was hugely popular. Well, what I had done with that and what I did with Scott's work on my other three books was I said, okay, I'm not going to beat people over the head. I'm not going to say, okay, you know, privilege and cisgendered and feminist and this, and I talk in the language of feminism, right? Like, every subculture has its language. I said, I'm going to speak to people in a way that is just like, this is the world how it is. I'm not going to preach to you. And I felt really successful. And I think actually I remember in my second book, as I was going through it, there was this character who kind of went on this, you know, it was a very modern white feminist rant that she goes on, and I looked at this rant and I was like, this does not belong in this book. This is me speaking from my, you know, my own in my own crazy, you know, subculture language. I need to speak the way that she would think about this. And so that's what I really have done with my books, and people have responded pretty well to it.
Given what you were just saying, you know, about getting good response and generally feeling like the characters and the images that you create are accepted in the mainstream world. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the first blog post that, you know, drew me to learn more about your work was about censorship and bullying in the sci-fi and fantasy writers community. So what led you to write that piece?
Science Fiction Fantasy Writers of America it's been a pretty conservative sort of group of folks for a long time. I think the last 10 years, they've been spending a tremendous amount of time and effort, the works of, you know, folks like Rachel Swirsky, Mary Robinette Cole, John Scalzi, to make themselves really more relevant and a little bit less tone deaf as far as with, you know, current science fiction and fantasy writers. What you have, though, is you have a little bit of a, you know, generation gap, I guess I would say, and sort of an issue between, you know, hey, the old school folks are like, well, this is the way we've always been, and this is how we've always talked, and then you have the younger folks coming in, younger and more progressive. I mean, it's not an ageist thing. There's just sort of a cultural thing. So you've got two kind of camps kind of at war with each other, and they're really sort of hidden, kind of a nadir, I guess, when a couple of more conservative folks were having a dialogue in the SFWA's Bulletin, which is their industry magazine. And there was some snark about, oh, lady writers and lady editors, and comments about how beautiful they were and how people were trying to censor them because, you know, all they wanted to do was just talk about how lovely these ladies were. And it was in the industry magazine. This was in the same issue that, you know, they put Red Sonja on the cover in her traditional chainmail bikini. And this comes, you know, to your doorstep as a science fiction fantasy writer, and you look at this bulletin, it's like these two dudes talking about lady writers and lady editors and how hot they used to be. And this, you know, chicken chainmail on the cover, and you're like, this is my industry magazine. What is this? And there have been some issues for some time, but finally both, you know, went to the blogs, and this is an especially big one, and I think it kind of got a lot more mainstream attention because John Scalzi was president of the SFWA at the time, and he has a pretty big blog following, and he's well known in lots of circles. So it got a lot of mainstream coverage, and so everybody wanted to weigh in about it. And of course, well, in the next issue of the Bulletin, you know, the guys who had their dialogue said, "Oh, well, we hear, you know, people, these anonymous people online had issues with what we had said, and you know, they're trying to censor us and bully us, and you know, but we're not going to be quiet and this and that and the other thing." And it's like, well, okay, guys, let's talk about what censorship is and what bullying is, and how what you're experiencing is actually just people telling you their opinions, just like you told us your opinions about, you know, hot lady writers. So it was one of those things where it was, I think, a bunch of folks just sort of got on and said, you know what, we're tired of this. We're really done. Some people, you know, resigned from the SFWA because of it. Some people join the SFWA because of it, because they're like, well, you know what? The more of us that are in there to change this sort of culture, the better things are going to be. And I think a lot of people were really kind of pick on, you know, science fiction fantasy. And I understand why this became such an issue, because you look at science fiction and you're like, wow, this should really be forward thinking. This should be some of the most amazing, progressive, incredible stuff that we've ever read. And the culture itself should then be, you know, reflect that. Well, you know, the science fiction and fantasy culture is going to be a reflection of the larger culture. And there are still a lot of holdouts. And I think if you look at what's happening in our culture today, what's happening in science fiction and fantasy, you know, writing culture is very similar to that. You've got these two camps, these folks who are like, this is the traditional way that we have always done things. And, you know, you've got other folks coming in saying, you know what, we're really tired of doing things this way and, you know, saying that women and minorities can't join these particular associations or are somehow looked down upon or kept out or their opinions aren't as valid. So it was one of those things where it was just became a conversation that blew up on the internet. I added my own opinion and some folks really seemed to respond well to it, because it actually, I think it's one of my most trafficked posts, which I thought was fascinating.
And one of the things I liked in that piece was that you acknowledge that you have sometimes been criticized for being racist or homophobic, or some things I read have, you know, accused your work of playing into Islamophobia, and you say that you appreciated that. And
Oh, really? So
I wonder, I mean, you know, that you appreciated people expressing their concerns, and I wonder if you could talk a little about that.
So, you know, writers are funny creatures, because on the one hand, it's like, you know, you write all this stuff and you throw it out there, and then you are like shocked when people tell you their opinions. It's the internet. There's going to be some opinions. But for me as a writer, like, I'm in this to get better. I'm in this to find where all my weak spots are and to fix them. And I can't fix something if I don't know that it's broken. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I'll write, and I'll write it the first time through, and I'll be like, oh, wow, that was the laziest, stupidest thing I've ever done. You know, I sat and I think this is one of the ones I mentioned in the post, was I had this woman general talking to the guy she put on the throne, and, you know, he makes this sexual slur toward her. And I was like, why the heck did I do that? That doesn't make any sense in this society. Why did I do it? Well, because that's what I see. That's what I see in all my media. That's what I absorb from the television. These are the kinds of conversations. When people have these conversations, this is the things that they say. And when I'm writing very quickly and I'm not thinking about it, that's what I come up with, because that's the stuff that we're programmed with. And if I don't sit down and say, okay, here's all my bad programming, I need to fix it and I need to address it, then it's just going to go out the door that way. And there's still going to be a lot of stuff that I miss. I mean, I have a bunch of first readers that are great. My agent reads my stuff. My spouse reads my stuff. I have a lot of people who read it. But, you know, there's always going to be something, because we are products of a racist, sexist society, and we're going to end up spitting out those same exact things, especially because of, and I'm in marketing, so I'm especially cognizant of this, especially because of the messages that we get every single day. I mean, we see thousands of ads every single day that reinforce sexist and racist tropes and stereotypes and ways that we should interact with each other. And that's where I'm at with that. I want to fix this. I want to write better stories. I want to write more interesting stories, less lazy stories, more progressive and interesting stories. And I'm not going to do that if I freak out every time somebody calls me on something I did that was lazy.
So I'm wondering how you balance blogging and fiction writing, and especially because, as you've mentioned, you also have a job that pays the bills, which is writing copy for marketing and advertising. So how did you get started blogging, first of all?
I got started blogging about 2004. I had just finished graduate school in South Africa, and I was living in Chicago. And when I was living in South Africa, I'd actually sent out a bunch of, like, once a week or once a month, I would send out these really long emails to a bunch of writing friends that I had. And I would just be talking about my experiences, like, oh, and, you know, here's what I did, and here's, you know, I went to Cape Town, and, you know, visited the vineyards, and it was great. And I found that the more of those I did, the more I started writing them. I mean, they were blog posts. I was writing narratives. I was writing little stories. And as I started looking at these, I was like, you know, I would love to share this, you know, in a forum where I didn't feel like I was imposing on them, where they could come and view it anytime they wanted, but I wasn't like spam emailing people. It was only like 10 people. So when I got home, I found, I think at the time, yeah, Blogger had just come into prominence. So I started up a free blog and I started posting those same things there. Where it was like, okay, well, here's what I did. And, you know, I took out, oh, I went boxing today, and here are things I'm learning while I'm, you know, boxing. And I talked about strength and power, and I talked about books that I read, and also issues I had with a lot of books that I read. I actually had a writer email me and say, you know, your interpretation of, you know, my female characters in this book is totally off base and blah, 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 blah. I was like, oh, my gosh. Like,
Wow, somebody's actually reading my blog?
Yeah, well, you don't writers care, right? And people still run into this today when they'll post in their blogs. They're like, oh, well, a writer has better things to do than Google themselves all day. It's like, no, we don't. And so we ended up having this back and forth, and he's a really great colleague, and we get along great today. Because eventually, at some point in the conversation, you know, he's like, hey, well, I think the reason I reacted so badly to this is because you're right, and it's something that's really bothered me, and I'm trying to fix it. And it was kind of the first time I went, wow, people are reading this. And it was only, you know, a couple hundred people a day, and like 400 people a day, and it just kind of started to grow, and I found I was getting a lot out of it. I met a lot of people online, and then when I went to WISCON, which I mentioned before, a feminist science fiction convention in Wisconsin, all of a sudden, like, I went there, and I think it was like the next year, and everyone's like, I must have like 6 people come up to me. Oh, you're Cameron Hurley. You write Brutal Women.
Do you have trouble balancing blogging, which is something that you really have to do on a schedule to keep up your readership, with working on your books?
I struggled with that for a long time because popular wisdom, you need to post preferably once a day around the same time, but you have to post once a week. I tried to do that for a long time, and what I found was that there are just times in my schedule where I do not have the headspace to do that, especially with all the things that are going on. What really helped me, there's a really great book called Book Life by Jeff Vandermeer, and he talks about how, you know, there are times where all you are doing is writing, and that's all you should be doing, and you need to turn off your social media, you need to not Google your name, you need to, you know, not take any, not be on Facebook, you know, reading about everybody else's six-figure deal. You just need to write. You need to turn it all off. And when you're done, you can come back, you know, 6 months on, 6 months off, or 3 months on, 3 months off, you know, whatever you need to do. And then when you come back, guess what? It will all still be there. Okay. And it felt like I almost needed permission to, like, walk away sometimes.
I'm curious. Some people say blogging's going out and everything's going to be Twitter and Instagram and these, you know, sort of shorter forms of communication. I'm very skeptical of that position because I feel like I look at blogs all the time for, I mean, not even maybe as much as some people I know, but like that's really where I turn when I'm looking for somebody to interview on a particular subject, or I just want to see what people are saying. But I'm curious, you know, as somebody who's more in the writing world than I, what's your take on that?
You know, it's funny. Last year, I took on teaching a copywriting class to, I think, the folks were between 18 and 20. And I said, well, you know, when you go to your favorite blog, and they just kind of looked at me. And one of the kids was like, what's a blog? And I thought he was effing with me. I'm like, oh, haha, whatever. He's like, no, really, what's a lot? I'm like, how many of you read blogs? I'm like, nobody raises their hand. I'm like, oh my God, this is horrible. I've missed some amazing, you know, shifts and whatever. And then the next day I came in, because I thought about it, and I talked to some people. I came in and I said, okay, how many of you guys read Tumblr or have a Tumblr? And they all raised their hand. I was like, oh, thank goodness.
Oh,
all that has changed, Tumblr, all it does is it's a blogging platform. Like, you got to get content. All the things that we talk about online are content. The stuff we talk about on Twitter is content. All these other things that we're creating, Twitter, Facebook, all this, these are ways that we share that content. But that content needs to live somewhere. And where it lives is your blog. I think as authors, you're always going to need to have a platform that you control. Because at some point, again, you know, whether they're sharing your stuff on Twitter or Facebook or Tumblr or Google Plus or wherever, that's all going to change. The mode that they use to share your content is always going to change. But your blog, the place where it all comes back to and all comes from and goes out to and all of that, that's all going to be the same.
Cameron Hurley is the author of The Belle Dame Apocryphal, which includes the books God's War, Rapture, and Infidel. Her blog is at CameronHurley.com. That's Cameron with a K. One of her stories is included in the recently released anthology, The Lowest Heaven, edited by Jared Schurin and Anne C. Perry. You're listening to Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org. I'm Kate Raphael. Back in a minute.